Hi, my name's Olivia. I'm an addict.
Hi, Olivia.
I'm really nervous. I've been trying not to think about this evening at all. And yeah, suddenly I'm sitting here and I feel like, yeah, really fucking scared. When I was in treatment, coming to Trafalgar on a Friday night was like as close as anyone got to having a night out. And this was like the focus of the week. This and Monday night when there's a 9 o'clock meeting and then I'd have something to do until 11. Yeah, so I suppose I'll start a little bit with how I got to NA. I started using really young when I was about 5 or 6. I started getting diagnosed with I have these incredibly, incredibly painful headaches and stomach aches, like agonizingly bad, and I'd have to be in dark rooms for days or whatever. And, you know, I went for every test in the world and they couldn't work out what was wrong with me. And eventually they said it was stress and it wasn't anything physical. But they prescribed me painkillers, codeine painkillers. And when I started taking those, I knew that it changed something for me. And, you know, I grew up, growing up, both my parents are addicts and neither of them are in recovery. And so growing up, you know, I was really privileged in a lot of ways. You know, I went to a great school. I had all the things, all the external things that, you know, I possibly could have wanted. But, you know, they couldn't give what they didn't have to give. And so it wasn't particularly communicative. And there were a lot of drugs around. And I think, you know, I suppose I don't think that's why I'm an addict at all. You know, I've got two younger sisters and one of them's completely fine. But I do think that has something to do with where I started to learn how to deal with the feelings that I had. And, you know, I always felt deeply, deeply alone. Like, whatever pain I was going through, you know, whatever pain a fucking 6 or 7 year old kid is going through, I felt like I was the only person who'd ever experienced it. And that feeling stayed with me until I came into NA. So I started doing that, and then when I realised, you know, I was taking like paracetamol and that as well, I just assumed that anything that you took would be something that would take away the pain. And then as I grew up, I learnt that, you know, the Nurofen Plus had the same stuff in it, so I'd nick money from my mum and go and get that, or nick what she had about. And you know, at 11 I had my first drink and drank to blackout. And it was, you know, it's a pretty similar story from then on of you know, picking up everything else. We talk a lot about this being a progressive illness, and for me that didn't progress in a way, like, you know, I started off smoking weed and then I got onto something else and something else. You know, by the time I was 14 or so, I'd taken everything that I was ever to take. It was just, the progression for me was just how unmanageable my life became around that stuff. The feelings sort of stayed the same. You know, by the time I was 17 or so, I had a really bad cocaine problem, and I was getting really, really bad anxiety attacks constantly, and I was, you know, I was really aggressive as well, and I was living with my family and my two younger sisters, and one was sort of 6 or 7, you know, and my mum chucked me out, which I felt a huge amount of resentment around, and she didn't do it in a particularly, you know, loving way, but with all fairness to her, I probably would have chucked me out as well. You know, it was a nightmare to be around, I was vile. And you know, so I had moved in. I moved in with a partner, which was, again, exactly what I did until I came into recovery. You know, it's in recovery is the first time that I've ever had somewhere to live that's my own, where I can lock the door. You know, when I came into recovery, I'd never, you know, I didn't know how you got a flat. Like, I didn't know if you went to an estate agent or like what you had to take with you or where you got it from. You know, as far as I understood, you know, you slept with someone, and like if you were entertaining enough, they'd invite you to move in. And and it worked. So I lived with a partner, and you know, continued using, and everything sort of stayed the fucking same. You know, there's sort of no point in going into all the specifics, all the horrible things that happened and the awful things I did and whatever, because you know, everyone's story in here, you know, is pretty similar. It's that, you know, we all ended up in some sort of miserable pain that we couldn't bear to be in anymore. But I was very good at making things look really attractive. You know, I went to a really good school, and I was really good. You know, I had like a full-blown drug habit at 16, and I got like 12 A stars at GCSE, and you know, I did really well, and you know, and I did my A levels and that, and I wasn't living at home by that point, but it all sort of came easily to me, and I never understood that. But that's one of the other things that I've learned coming into the rooms, is that, you know, a lot of people I've met are very good at covering up, you know, their addiction in whatever way that means. And for me, you know, if I was getting good enough grades, then the money was there for me to take drugs from my parents or whatever. You know, no one was on my back about it. So I made it work. And I went to university. I moved up to Manchester, and it was the same. And I did well at university, and you know, my drug dealer would come and collect me from the library, and I'd get changed in the back of his car, and he'd take me off, you know, down to wherever, and I'd use, and it never sort of hit me. You know, I knew how fucking unhappy I was. You know, I'd lie in bed and I'd cry and I'd cry and I'd beg for something to help me, and you know, and I'm not a Christian. You know, I wasn't brought up in a religious background. You know, I really felt like spirituality and religion was something that people who had nothing else clung on to, and it was sort of pitiful. And yet, you know, I'd lie in bed on my own and cry and beg for something to help me out. And you know, I did 3 years there, and by the end of that, I was in a really bad way, and people had started saying to me, well, they haven't started, they've been saying it for a very long time, but people had really been, you know, pushing me to go and get help. And you know, I've been in therapy since I was about 14. I've had every fucking type of therapy I can imagine. You know, I've had movement therapy and art therapy and CBT courses, after fucking so many CBT courses, and everything like that I thought you would parody on the telly about therapy, I've done at some point. And I had this therapist then, and I thought that was nothing. You know, I never went, and she would come. I mean, she was a really nice woman, and she used to come and knock on my door. You know, my therapy appointments were at 4 PM because I couldn't commit to doing anything before 4 o'clock. And she would, and I still never went. And, you know, I'd sit there and I'd watch the clock. You know, I'd wake up and I'd use and I'd watch the clock, and I'd be like, okay, in 3 hours, I've got to make it down to therapy. It was like a 5-minute walk away. And I just remember sitting there just not being able to get out of bed and just not being able to make that step to help myself in any way. And she used to come knock on my door and like post letters through, and it was really nice. And you know, I had all that support around me. I worked out, you know, ways to get. I think I was like her research. I was her research case for a new thing they were trialing for the NHS. And I used to feel so guilty because I was like, I'm ruining everyone's chances. So I used to lie a lot because they would record it as well, and people had listened back to it. And I just felt like I was such a terrible person. If anyone else were to ever listen to the recordings, you know, they'd fucking hate me. So I thought, oh, I'd better, you know, chuck something else in. So anyway, you know, I had a bit of support around me, and people said, you know, you've got to go and get help. And then I got caught. I had a housemate who had cancer, and I got caught nicking his Oramorph one day, and that was when I felt too ashamed to stay talking to any of the people that I'd known. So I said I was moving to Paris, and I hadn't you know, I'd said for a while that I was moving to Paris because I really liked French feminism and I thought it sounded really beautiful. And you know, I said it without thinking anything through. You know, it was just sort of a vague idea. And someone said, you know, you're not moving to Paris, you're a fucking liar. And again, like, I was so embarrassed that I got the last of my money and I booked a Eurostar ticket and I moved to France the next day. And I didn't speak any French and I didn't have any fucking money or anywhere to live. And I didn't know anyone there. And I got there. And on that day, like, I worked out staying at someone's friend's place for a week. And I got there and I thought, this is my chance. You know, I'm on the Eurostar. I thought, this is my fucking chance. I'm going to change it all up. And I remember getting there. I got there about 5. And then I just walked the streets. And it's so beautiful. And I walked around. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. You know, it's going to be my new life. I'm going to, you know, I'll marry a French person and I'll be like this amazing feminist and like everyone at home will think I'm so chic. And I just didn't, you know, I had no fucking friend, I had nothing to do. I like literally couldn't buy a packet of cigarettes. And I walked around and eventually, you know, some guy, you know, I got really pissed and some guy tried to rape me. And I went home that night, you know, and I was in a state and I was all beaten and that. And I just took, you know, I took everything that I brought with me. I just thought, fuck it, you know, game over. You know, I've been here like 7 hours or something and already something's happened. I'm, you know, I fucking give up. And so I just used in Paris. I used in Paris for a couple of years and ended up in the same way that I always had. And eventually, you know, after a while there, more than anything else, I was just so fucking tired. Like, I lived, lived with a partner, and we had this really tiny little studio flat, because it's like £1 million to get fucking anywhere to live there. And we had this little room we lived in, and I used to wake up in the mornings and I'd be sick every morning. And he wasn't on the same, like, you know, he wasn't on the same page as me. So I'd get really embarrassed, and the bathroom was right next to the bed, so he would definitely hear me. And so what I used to do was I'd get up and I'd go out, and we lived just by Sacré-Cœur, like one of the most beautiful places in the world, and I'd run off down to one of the cafes down there, like past all the tourists who've come to like propose to their girlfriends or whatever, and like puke in the little toilets there and have a drink or whatever, and then go back to bed. I used to always come going to buy croissants, I never came back with a fucking croissant. I was just really fucking tired. I was really tired of lying and I didn't know what to do. You know, I'd been on every medication, I'd been diagnosed with every mental illness, and it felt like, you know, I just needed to give up. So I tried to talk myself and I got brought back here and I got put into a psych ward, and, you know, and then I transferred over onto addictions ward and I did a detox and ended up in a treatment centre, and it was really nice, my detox. Like, I was absolutely fine with being there. Like, I got there and I was on the psych ward, so they gave me loads of meds, and it was like being in a hotel, and like they changed your sheets every day and they cleaned the rooms and all that, and it was really nice. And then, you know, I thought, I'll give myself a couple of weeks off, you know, fine, whatever. And then I went to my second treatment centre, which was like a proper treatment centre where, you know, you had group therapy and I was with like 24 other women, and, you know, a few of the women are here now, and I'm pretty sure we were on the same boat when, like, it's, you know, it was pretty fucking rough, like living with 24 other women when I'd never, you know, I fucking hated women so much. And you were like, you know, and you had to share a room, and it was, you know, it was vile. But it was what brought me to NA, and it was a really wonderful, wonderful opportunity. And I don't know what it was about when I came into the rooms. You know, I didn't have like a ray of light or anything. You know, I first got taken to an AA meeting in Kingston, and everyone there was like a million years old, and people kept talking about God, and I just thought, fuck this, I'm 23 and you are all horrible. And I'm in Kingston. I used to live in Paris. And like, it was, so, you know, I wasn't like, oh, wow, the 12 steps, magical. You know, I just had, you know, you had to come here and treatment. And also, there was fuck all else to do. Like, no one knew I was back in London. The people who did, I'm going, the people who did didn't want to see me. So I just came here because I had nowhere else to go. And there was something here about the way that people spoke to me that made me realise that I wasn't alone. And the honesty that there was in these rooms and the love and compassion that I was shown time after time after time made me realise that it was worth a shot. And I just followed every fucking suggestion. I did 90 and 90 and I did it again. And I got a sponsor and I started working the steps and I, you know, stuck with women. And I just did everything because I didn't know what else to do. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm 2 years in next week. And I just, there isn't anything particularly exciting to what's happened in the past 2 years, apart from the fact that, you know, my life is better than it's ever been and I don't want to die anymore. And, you know, and I've got hope and I really... You know, I'm 25 and it's a Friday night and I really love being clean and I'm going to go home and watch the telly and have a bath and I'm really, really happy about that and I'm really grateful to be here this evening and I'll leave it there. Thank you.